Hello.
Buongiorno.
Hello, Lou.
Hello.
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 Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. You just blipped out for a second when we first connected.
Oh, that's because I talked over you.
What?
It's because I talked over you.
Oh, you literally cut out like every other word there.
Oh.
Let's check and make sure the drop boxes are paused.
Mine is.
Yeah, okay.
I wouldn't put it past it being mine because my Bluetooth devices are acting very funny. Where it'll like a key will just get like stuck down. Usually it's like a spacebar key or an arrow key or something, but maybe it could be my mute switch. You never know. I don't know.
Yeah. Couldn't be. I mean,
let me know if I start cutting out and I'll turn my Bluetooth keyboard off.
Just start pushing on it every other word just to drive me crazy.
I can just talk that.
Oh, please don't do that.
Is that fun? Is that fun for you in the audience?
That was entertaining. Yeah.
That's what we're here for, right?
Mm-hmm.
To entertain.
To are you not entertained? As a Roman gladiator once said.
I mean, on the whole, if I have to average everything out, I'm going to say I err on the side of less than entertained at the moment. Wasting time on a podcast, though, I'd say I'm fairly entertained at the moment.
Wasting time on a podcast.
Well, you know, it's everything we do is just wasting time until we die.
Yeah, well, of course. And what better way to waste our time than to fall slowly out of the sky?
It takes a little while, doesn't it?
No, it takes a really quite a long time. I'm not sure whose idea that was. Not a huge fan of that as the intro device for us into this movie and listeners to this episode. The movie that we are deriding right now is Predators. Now you
I'm
don't
not
know
deriding.
We could,
are you deriding?
We could be neutral on the subject, of course, and Predators, which was rebooted after this movie came out, was totally a great movie, and the reboot was unnecessary. Who could say?
I have some theories on that, which I guess we'll get to at some point.
Yeah. This is an interesting one here. I had not seen it until it was on TV, and then I pulled a Dan and I watched something that was on TV when I could have been doing literally anything else with my life. And
doesn't it feel good to be an old person sitting in a chair watching what's on television?
Oh, it was a couch. But that movie was laughable when I saw it. And then we discussed AVP Requiem, the second AVP movie. Which was so bad that it killed the AVP franchise. And then everybody said, hold on a second. What if we just go back to it being Predators? Because Ridley Scott wants to make something else. And so they did that. And they tried something here with the thing that they did. It's produced by Robert Rodriguez. It feels like it's produced by Robert Rodriguez.
I remember specifically when this movie was coming out. I don't know if it was TV commercials or if it was like they did a DVD on TV of like the previous AVPs or something. And in the commercial breaks, they were showing behind the scenes snippets. But I remember seeing footage of Robert Rodriguez in sort of like a model shop talking about the new mask designs and monster designs that they were going to create. And to the point that I kind of thought this was a Robert Rodriguez movie until I saw it and then looked it up, and it's I don't want to try to pronounce this guy's name because I don't want to be insulting, but it is spelled the same as the word Nimrod but with an accent over the O.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would have just said Nimrod and Tal as well, but he's Hungarian, so I don't know if there is a special way you pronounce the O over that. But Nimrod is my favorite Sentinel from the future. In the Marvel Comics universe. But that's neither here nor there.
Is it also your favorite Green Day album?
No.
What's your favorite Green Day album then?
I couldn't pick one. I love them all so much.
but, you know, being named Nimrod, it must be extra hard for you. to pick a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to do a Michael Bolton. Anyway.
So he is the rector of Control with a K, and then Troll, like the Justin Timberlake, and then Vacancy, and then Armored, and then Predators, and then Metallica, colon, Through the Never, and then Wayward Pines, he did an episode of, and then Whiskey Robber, he did that. I've not heard of the majority of these things. I mean, I have heard of Metallica and Wayward Pines, but not in a good way. That's interesting.
He had a bit role as an actor in the Machete movie, which makes you wonder if that's where he got hooked up with Robert Rodriguez.
Interesting.
Same year, though, so that would be a quick turn.
Mm. I think they probably were friends before that, and that was why he was in Death Toll. But anywho, Predators, a 2010 American science fiction film, is an attempt to revitalize what had been going on with the Predator franchise, which had waned significantly. We of course had our original Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it had its thing that there is a predator from outer space that comes to the jungle to hunt people, and this coincides with a special secret ops mission. So at first, secret ops mission, and then all of a sudden, oh no, you're being hunted by an alien. And that was sufficiently suspenseful. And then Predator 2 was, let's do that in a city, and then have Nick Nolte in it for reasons.
But yeah, no special ops people. It's just the gritty streets of Los Angeles.
Sorry, Gary Busey, not Nick Nolte.
Same difference. I feel like there was a point in time where their paths crossed such that they were the same person.
Perhaps.
They started out separate, they crossed, became the same person, and then they diverged.
Yes. It's like that Robert Frost poem.
Exactly.
Exactly like it.
Have you seen an Ulti cross in the forest? But oh, boy. Can you imagine the two of them just like walking down a little dirt path in the forest that comes to a junction, and they arrive at the same time, and it's just Nick Nolte and Gary Busey standing there together alone in the forest?
How do you even time that so that they would go down that pathway at the same time?
Well, you know, you drop them out of the Predator parachute sky at the same time, and then they just start meandering.
Maybe that would have been a more interesting movie, but... So this was intended to revitalize the stuff, and so we kind of just brush aside all the AVP stuff, and
thankfully we brush aside the AVP things.
Now it the way this movie takes place, those things could have happened, but
there could very easily have been an alien skull dangling from a thing in their little camp there.
Yeah, but you could basically draw a line between the first movie and this movie if you really wanted to. I think that was what they were trying to go for with this, because there aren't really specific callbacks to the other films in this franchise. There are, of course, there's an evolution of design and what they're doing, because the people making it have seen all the other movies. But the goal seems to have been, from a writing standpoint, that you'd basically continue from one to the other. And what this does is sort of turn it on its head in terms of an alien, the Predator. I would say alien, except that I don't want to get that confused now that their paths have crossed in the wood. But they're the Predator. Instead of the Predator coming to Earth, the Predators survey and select targets across several continents on the planet, and then abduct people like gray aliens, and then take them across the universe to their hunting preserve, which is either a planet or a thing, a rock or something.
Maybe,
who knows?
Maybe a holodeck of some sort. We don't really know.
Yeah, it's not really spelled out. You know, like pull out like Dark City and go, oh no. This is. Spoiler alert for Dark City.
Jeez, thanks.
Have you seen Dark City?
I don't think so.
Oh.
that the ones with the vampire guys and the cloaks that float?
Well, they're not vampires.
Okay, so I've at least seen an image or a trailer. Yeah.
You probably saw something about it. I think you might like Dark City, but you have to go into that with a, I don't know, open mind and open bottle. If you're Melicorn, but this is a situation where they're like, yeah, we're gonna flip it on its head. It's gonna be the humans going to the predator environment, and they're being hunted by the predators there instead of
it's the predator developer staging environment, not the actual predator production release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I gotta say personally, there are worse premises for a movie than this, particularly the two that just came before this that we watched. And maybe it was me having very low expectations. Maybe it was me being very tired. But this movie was inoffensive, I guess, would be a way to describe it. There's some fairly cheesy dialogue that could have used a second pass or some extra editing in places. It's mostly relatively competently executed for what it is, in my opinion. So it's not, but I think the problem in general with these movies is that there's not a whole lot of, material to mine from Predator.
No,
like it's just like you got a monster in the forest and then you come across it and it's going to hunt you and you got to be better than the monster. And then you flip it and it's like, well, now you're on the monster's turf. But like, okay, that's a movie. Apparently, but it's hard to make that into a whole thing. So they're trying some things, and I give them credit for trying some stuff. It's not a great movie, but it could have been a lot dumber.
Yes,
but I do think they missed the mark in one major area in that. Lawrence Fishburne, crazy Lawrence Fishburne is in here talking about how, again, this is the dev environment for the Predators. So if you beat them, they're going to learn from that and come back with, better weapons, better tactics, better whatever. They don't really demonstrate a whole lot of technical skill in any way in this movie. They're basically just, they cloak and then they just like walk right up to everybody and they're like, I'm going to stab you now.
Hmm.
So that's, not really in line with the stated goal of the Predators, the alien Predators, the tall Predators, the dreadlock Predators, not the the human Predators, because we're all Predators.
This is a very subtle metaphor.
We all live in a Predator submarine.
If only this movie had some subtext, am I right? Yeah, this is.
I'm not even kidding. When I said that in the Slack, that she almost literally said maybe the Predators were the friends we made along the way,
because
they've all joined forces together to try and get out alive, and she's like, they chose us because we're Predators. Like, did you have to use the word? You're not Predators. You're soldiers and like maybe bad people with questionable moral compasses who. Kill people for money, but whatever.
Yeah, it is curious that she would latch onto that very specific word for us as the audience watching this movie, since it's the title of the film. This is curious development note, by the way, since I care virtually nothing about the franchise or the specific production of this, I just discovered that apparently this was produced because of a early script that Rodriguez had written in 1994 for a third Predator film while he was working on Desperado. And he presented the script, but they said that the budget would be too big, so they weren't going to do it. And then 15 years later...
What part of this movie had a big budget? Is it just the fact that there's three Predators instead of one?
Well, I think that... I'm going to guess that maybe there was some stuff that was more alien-ish at the time that was maybe also pared down for this movie.
Oh, I guess you got your CGI dogs.
Ugh, yuck. So let's just dive into this. We have, so to speak, since we dive in from Adrian Brody falling against a screen that was removed via keying, and then his edges were blurred to crap and light wrapped in crap, and so he's very fuzzy and evenly eroded all the way around, and then he falls and falls and falls, and then he tries his alien parachute thingy and it doesn't work, and then he crashes and then he gets up and realizes there's all these other people.
And you can tell they were super proud of that falling sequence too, because he hits the ground with such a gnarly thud, and then they're like, "Predators!" And they're like, "How about that for an intro? Never thought you'd be falling out of the sky and then just smash into the ground to start a movie, right? Adrenaline ride has begun."
Yeah, did not.
And then he hops up in his very decked out army gear with the most impractical weapon anyone could possibly choose when going into battle, which is a semi-automatic shotgun with a, I don't know, 50 round drum attached to it. It has to weigh 80 pounds, and there's no way he could carry enough ammunition on that to ever make it useful in any combat situation ever. But whatever, that's his weapon of choice. They wanted to go a little off the beaten path to show that he's not your regular army guy. He's unique. He's interesting. He's different.
Well, the people in the first Predator film certainly didn't carry the most practical weaponry.
I mean, but they at least like rounded each other out to where that like most of them had standard automatic weapons, and then the big guy had like the saw or whatever, and then what's his name had the minigun. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you got a sniper. You got like Danny Trejo with MP5s. You got a Yakuza dude with a suppressed Beretta. Like they're just like, what's the most slightly off the wall? Like give me the third most popular gun that a person like this could carry.
Yeah, and then you have a convicted prisoner who has a knife.
Of course,
Topher Grace, who has a scalpel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's got a little to-go package of doctor utilities.
Yeah, it was very nice of the Predators to abduct him at a time when he had that on his person.
Well, he was on his way to work. I mean, you know, if you're a doctor, aren't you morally obligated to always carry a small pouch with, you know, some tweezers and scissors and a scalpel?
I'm not sure that's really in the Hippocratic Oath, but maybe. I haven't read it in a while.
Velcro pouch with a scalpel in it. Mm-hmm. Seems like a bad idea, given that the scalpel is supposed to be sharper than basically everything.
Yeah. But anyway, let's not think about that scalpel too much, because we don't need it until the third act. We have to deal
it is literally Chekhov's scalpel, isn't it?
So is. What we have to deal with is the collection of our group here. Instead of an army team that already knows each other flying into battle on a helicopter, we're introduced to people one by one as they are recovered from the parachutes in various places around the jungle. And we get Danny Trejo, and we get Mahershala Ali, and we get the convict guy, who is a character actor that I can't remember the name of.
Walton Goggins.
Yeah, and but he's so familiar, but at the same time, totally blanking on him. And you just
gotta yell Django.
And we get Alice Braga, she's, you know, there. She's tough. She's a tough cookie.
She's got a sniper rifle, and she furrows her brow prodigiously.
Mm-hmm. She's the star of Queen of the South. Yeah. And then you get your Mr. Topher Grace, short for Christopher, if anyone's wondering.
Yeah, he much like the weapons in this film, he took the obvious choice and then went with the opposite.
Yes. So Topher Grace is mostly familiar from that 70s show, but he had a hit run in movies when he did Venom in Spider-Man 3.
is that what really kicked off his dramatic career?
Oh, everybody loved it. But he's here. And what seems weird about him is that he's not obviously decked out in camo and stuff, and he's a doctor. Why would they pick him? And then you get Oleg Taktarov as Nikolai, who is mm-hmm. a Russian commando, and you get...
this is the guy from Bad Boys 2 that they cut up and stick in the tortilla bin.
Oh, it is. I forgot about him.
Oh, come on, man. Like, yeah. he plays a Russian mobster fella in just about everything that the other guy does.
Oh, when you got a thing, you do the thing.
Yeah.
And then
the skid, they say.
You've got Louis Ozawa, Chen Jichen as Hanzo. And he's a Yakuza. And
his character's name is Hanzo. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know.
Thanks, Robert Rodriguez. We get it. You're friends with Tarantino.
It's not so bad until you get to the part with the grass, but we'll get there. And then you get
does it get a little ping pong for you?
It gets a little. Did you have to do it exactly like that?
I mean, this planet is nothing if not an exploration of all of the forms of combat available to people around the world.
So they're all
Rains in the chat says all Japanese Yakuza are named Hanzo according to Tarantino. And he does like to retcon history a little bit, so that does sound like a very Tarantino rule. You think he just has a Bible of his like arbitrary like revisions of history that he refers to from time to time?
I am not sure that he writes anything down, really. I get a feeling that maybe he just takes a hit of something and then goes Hanzo and then exclaims that and then goes back to what he was doing.
Did you listen to that podcast that
absolutely not under any circumstances will I ever listen to that.
the one bit of trivia that I'll give you is that he handwrites his scripts and then he types them into
typewriter.
No, it is a word processing computer from the 80s that uses floppy disks. And he dispels a bit of lore about himself that the rumor is that the floppy disks only hold like 10 pages at a time. So he prints out every page one by one. No, it's weirder than that. He likes to type a single page, save it, and then print that page because he likes the feel of like you write a page and then you have that page in your hand. So he types a page with one finger and then prints it out and then types the next page and prints it out and types the next page and then prints it out.
You know, I wonder if there's an alternate dimension where somebody said thanks but no thanks to Quentin Tarantino and then someone more successful came along and then they got famous. That would be interesting to me.
And they're not quite as weird or insane.
I was going to say eccentric. And
that works too. I think at this point he has questionable tastes. He's like a self-sustaining collapsing star or whatever because he just sort of like the weird sort of fake, you know, celebrity personality that he has attempted to create by being so unusual has like become the thing to focus on. Like he's a walking tautology right now. Like he's Tarantino because he's Tarantino. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
This is Robert Rodriguez, the Texas version. Texas Tarantino.
Oh, thank you for clearing that up, Dan. Mm-hmm. And
he wears the jeans that have a lot more bedazzling, and he has one of those cowboy hats with the real curled edges.
And a suitable array of questionable romantic decisions.
Well, that's both of them, isn't it?
Yeah. It's quite a thing. So you have these actors who all come together and they say what it is that they do. You know, you get your convict, you got the death squad guy from Sierra Leone, you've got the Yakuza guy, you've got the drug cartel guy, who's Danny Trejo, you've got Adrian Brody, who is special ops guy, who
former special ops mercenary of some mm-hmm. sort, who had some bad stuff happen, man. He's got a really jaded view on life or whatever. But you spend the first act of this movie throwing these characters together and where they're trying to figure out what the hell happened, where they are, what they have in common, who's going to be in charge, where they're going to go. You know, And that's the part that actually almost kind of sort of feels like real human beings talking to each other, except for, you know, some fairly cheesy lines every now and again. But they do a decent job of just basically being confused and freaked out by the fact that they were all just in the blink of an eye abducted and dropped into some random jungle that does not appear to abide by the laws of physics because the sun is not moving and
there's no magnetic north,
which is apparently they teach you that in Boy Scouts and
Israel Defense Forces.
Yeah, special hops. What was it? You put a match on a leaf in the water and it spins?
Yeah, it was apparently Alice Braga's thing. But the... Alice Braga's character's thing. They wanted to make it seem weird and otherworldly before you actually see the planets in the sky, which... by the time you get to that scene, you're like, how did they not see that from where they were before? You didn't need like a clearing for that one. But they have an interesting situation where it's daytime, the sun's directly overhead, and Alex Braga is talking about how she's seen a lot of jungles, and this isn't any jungle that she's familiar with because it's the wrong time of year for it to be Asia, but blah 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 blah. Anyway, it's total nonsense.
The wrong time of year for it to be Asia in these movies, isn't it?
It is a complete nonsense thing that she's talking about. But they just want to give you that something weird is happening, and they come across,
Which is fine. Like they do, you know, as long as you don't think about it, it's fine.
And yeah, to put that on the poster for this movie. As long as you don't think about it, it's fine.
Think about it. Look at the pretty pictures.
Are they pretty?
Adrian Brody got in good shape for this movie.
But he's still him, so it's a point against.
His shoulders are so wide in this movie, and he's got that vest on that makes his shoulders look even wider. It almost looks like his head is too small.
Well, he's a very narrow head, but high cheekbones. Anyway, so they come across a crate that fell out of the sky too. And they're like, what was in the crate? And then they see all the tracks and stuff. And then Adrian Brody's like, you know, I think we're on a nature preserve and we're being hunted. And I, blah, blah, blah. And it's nonsense. And then he comes, they come across the clearing and they see the sky and they got the dog things that chase them.
Well, don't forget they stumbled through a bunch of Vietnam era booby traps.
Yes, and then they find a dead guy, and Topher Grace, as the doctor, helpfully identifies the level of decomposition that he assumes that this person is.
From like 20 yards away, he's like, ballpark at 2 weeks.
Yeah, and...
It's like, really, Topher? Do you see a lot of people whose chests are torn open that you can gauge the level of decomposition from?
Yeah, especially in this humidity.
It's not the heat, it's the humidity that really gets the decomposition.
And so they find the guy and they think that's weird, and they come across the dogs and all this other stuff, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, this they were called away, that was like to flush us out, they're dogs on the hunt, and you know, it's what I would have done. And it's like, really,
they're watching us to see how we react, to see if we've properly created an efficient team dynamic in the past 20 minutes, and or whether they're going to be able to pick us off one by one. Which, you know, whatever. This is some of the dialogue that is a little... They know they're writing a Predator movie.
No, this is the dialogue that's like... We would have written this as the internal monologue of a character if we were writing a novel, but we don't know how to write a movie, so we're just going to have a character say it. He does. And it happens a few times in this movie where all of a sudden he just says something, and it's like... I guess his character was reading the script, because like there's no way a human being would just like spontaneously utter this. But so he says that, and they're like, oh wait, we're missing a guy. And so they go find Danny Trejo, who's in the middle of a bunch of ferns, all slumped over, not looking so great, not moving. And this is where they say, oh, we go get him. And then he's like, no, it's a trap, because it's what I would have done. Trap him, because, you know, hey, Adrian Brody. And they decide to leave, so one by one they file out.
Next time anybody ever asks me, how do you know about literally anything, I'm just going to go, it's what I would have done. What's the capital of Bolivia? I'm just gonna say Texas because it's what I would have done.
I'm not sure that necessarily worked in that scenario, but you could keep trying that, workshop it. But what I really would have liked in this movie is if somebody would have just called him on it and be like, "Why would you have done that?"
Explain it, special ops guy. Yeah. Isn't it self-evident? No, it's not self-evident.
No. He says it so matter-of-factly, like, "Can't you see? This is the obvious way you would hunt people on an alien planet."
Exactly.
She stays behind, Alice Braga, and then she uses her sniper rifle to put him out of his to put Danny Trejo out of his misery, and the shot does not completely knock him over, but he's still asking for help. And then she realizes that it was something else going on.
Yeah, so in addition to being a hunting preserve, this is also, it's like Q's laboratory for predators, because they're just like, let's see if if this human species is dumb enough to fall for this. Because like the predator's like standing right there, like making the Danny Trejo noises. And it could have easily just like lunged and killed a bunch of them because they were just like standing there for 5 minutes looking at the Danny Trejo trap, which again, what was the trap? Like there's a predator standing next to Danny Trejo. And if they get close enough, he's just going to like swing his arms and cut all their heads off. But like he can't move because maybe he's holding Danny Trejo's corpse up. So he looks not dead. So he can't like let go of it. Cause that would be obvious, or I don't know, maybe he didn't want to spill his tea or something, but
he didn't necessarily need to be there. Maybe he's throwing his voice.
Sure, but yeah, like what was the trap? Like if they step forward, is the predator like not allowed to cross the grass threshold or something?
No, it's really convoluted, because this movie, I know earlier you had said that you approved this conceit for this movie over the previous Alien versus Predator films. And I will disagree on this point because these aliens have no internal logic that makes any sense for the behavior that they are participating in here, because they have abducted all of these people from Earth. So instantly you know that they are capable of overpowering and killing them. It is not a hunt. But then they deposit them here on this nature preserve to experiment and see what they can do. And there are some conversations about that to that effect. The con man guy says that, you know, they, you know, maybe they're all drugged up and this is an experiment. And Topher Grace says no, because then we'd lose motor skill and blah 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 from all the hallucinogens. That's you know, just one of those things where it's just like, okay, so obviously they want to participate in a hunt with these specific people that they've scouted out and abducted and deposited here. So they don't want to just like kill them to prove superiority. They want to kill them in certain circumstances to prove superiority. And so then it becomes, what are those circumstances? And apparently those circumstances are if the dogs kill them, if they kill them, and if they fall into a trap that is set for them, then it's all fair game. But
yeah, that's why this is like the proving ground for them to, or maybe it's because these is there a name for the extra elongated predators?
No.
Maybe the Predator S Maxes or whatever, like, don't know humans very well, so they're trying to do a little bit of research before they actually get into it. But yeah, the idea of the Predator being like the best hunter in the universe and going to find the most dangerous prey, ideally in their natural environment, because, you know, even if this was a hunting preserve, it's a little too much fish in a barrel, because like it's their home turf. So if you really want to learn, you gotta go to where the prey is. Not it's not where the predators are, it's where the prey is.
Yeah, home is where the prey is. But this is why the first movie, and to a degree the second movie, work better, because the predators are hunting humans on their own turf in an environment where they are more or less by themselves.
Yeah, that's the interesting part where they're like trying to figure out how this works. Like, oh, look, we're in the forest or we're in the city, and like how do they move around and where are they going and when do they sleep and what do they eat and what are they doing? And I'll track them for a little while and then I'll attack, as opposed to just like, welcome to my backyard. Watch out for the dog. And then also, I'm going to use one of your dead friends to see if you're willing to try and help him.
Yeah, and it's less interesting behavior from the predators because when you get to later parts of this film, it's not a psychological experiment. It goes to the usual predator stuff. And so it's just like, well, then what's the point of psychologically profiling and selecting these people? It seems like nonsense. But they get out of this trapped scenario and they keep roaming around, and Adrian Brody comes up with this plan that they'll follow the tracks of the dog things back to the camp that wherever they're coming from, and then they're going to take the fight to who's after them. At this point, they assume that there's only one thing after them. They refer to it as it, and its planet and all this other stuff. And so they get to that camp.
Because if there's one thing we know about planets, they are typically inhabited by a single being.
Yes. It's usually the norm. Yeah. And speaking from personal experience, they arrive at the camp. They see a bunch of flayed skin things and, I'm sorry. And at one point, ex-con guy was... Well, not ex-con. I guess he's a current con. The convicted prisoner guy. He whines a lot about how he needs to have a gun and stuff, and they have confrontation and things. But they get to the camp. He still doesn't have one. And they survey it. There's flayed bodies. There's fires going. There's no sign of the dog things, and there's no sign of the predators or. For the audience, there's a sign of the predators, and they approach what they refer to as a totem, which is sort of like a boomerang with a camouflage imprint on it. And
it's a gigantic caltrop.
Yeah, they walk right up to it and they see what we, as the audience, know is a predator from the earlier films who looks very similar to the kind of predator you might have seen in the first film. He is in the credits as Classic Predator.
Didn't we meet Morgan Freeman? Jesus, Lawrence
no.
Fishburne before we
no,
got
no,
to
no,
this.
No, 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 no. It's after he observes them.
Right. I thought that was later. Oh, I guess this is after. It's after they go run away and pretend like they're going to be taking a nap or something.
Right. They're going to regroup and do the thing. So in this, they say, "Oh wait, where did Adrian Brody go?" And then they. Notice that they are under attack from the predators who have been watching them around the camp, and the predators are using their energy weapons and all the other normal predator stuff. And so everybody's running around screaming, and Adrian Brody's shooting at the predators and not hitting anything in spite of the ammo and gun thing that he has expending.
That's why you don't bring a shotgun to a predator fight. It's a stupid weapon. It's hard to wield, and it's not terribly effective.
Yeah, especially against invisible things. But they have the thing where they're just, you know, firing and stuff, and then they get out. And Mahershala Ali is speared. With like some sort of triple spear thing, and everybody gets out of there except for Mahershala Ali, Avi, and they jump off of a cliff thing that goes to a big old waterfall lake thing, very reminiscent of the first film, and they go into the water, and then they swim up onto the little like under rock cantilevered thing there, sort of like a three quarters cave, I guess. So it's not really like protection or anything. There's a drone thing that sees all of them do that and then flies back to the camp. And the drone thing is interesting, I suppose, except you never see it again. Doesn't do anything. And the
not
predators...
to mention the one random other alien that's there, which I guess is also prey. But there are a couple things in this movie where they bring out one thing one time and you're like, You really need that.
Yeah. And so the three predators decloak, and you see them, and they look like predators, but with different mask things. And what we as the audience are, I think, supposed to be taking away at this point from the filmmakers is that these are bigger, badder predators, except we don't see them in relationship to anything else, so we have no idea what the scale of these predators are. They just seem like different predators.
Yeah. The whole, I mean, they have more accoutrement on their masks, basically.
They have more interesting sartorial choices.
Yes, exactly. These are the Savile Row predators. There is that distinction made that there's two different kinds. They're similar but different. But that is not revealed until much later, which,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if they needed to hold off on that reveal, really.
Well, they needed to have somebody say it because the predators weren't going to say it, and the people weren't going to figure that one out. But they are in the little cave thing, and this is where Isabella punches Adrian Brody in the face and says that he set them up as a trap. They were bait. And he's like, yeah, I had to do it because I had to, you know, make sure that I could shoot them, blah, blah, blah. And
I love how she's mad that Adrian Brody, quote unquote, used them as bait when his what he did was slowly back away and hide behind a tree. It's not like he, like, you know, lashed their ankles to a tree stump or something so they couldn't get out of there. She's like, you led us into that camp on purpose. He's like, well, he was there too. And then he just, like, slowly backed away, and he was fine. So, like, the fact that you weren't paying attention doesn't make a difference.
It was wrong of him to not bring them in on the plan.
Well, I mean, but what was his plan? To just, like, slowly back away when you heard that the predators were coming? Like, yeah, that's just kind of what you should do.
Well, nobody else knew that the predators were coming. His plan was to back away the whole entire time and then wait to see who's drawn out.
They heard noises. They knew things.
Yeah. So she confronts him about that, and then he confronts her because he's like, oh, well, you recognize the creature. And then she's like, there were stories. And this is supposed to be reminiscent of the first film where I forget the character's name, the insurgent that they capture. She reveals there is a thing, you know, only in the hot months something comes and then, you know, takes away people. And they get sort of the same thing here where it's like, oh, in the, you know, the one time in the Guatemala, there was the thing and this, the physical description of that thing. And it could, obscure itself from ambient light and blah, 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 blah. I didn't think it was real, et cetera. And then it's like, well, it's real and blah, 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 blah. And we need a plan. And our plan is that we're going to regroup and we're going to set some traps and then we're going to, you know, capture it. And they're all like, yeah, plan. And so then they go do that, where they all group up. And then he quotes Hemingway to her, which is great. And then they make Topher Grace run around in the forest. And this draws out a different alien entity who chases after Topher Grace. It's not entirely clear the damage that creature was going to do to Topher Grace, or if he was gonna like hug him or anything. We really,
yeah, maybe
never...
that thing was also being hunted and he just wanted an ally and some help.
Yeah, well, just like all of these other humans, except probably would have killed Topher Grace, but you know, the world would have been better. They kill the thing, and then they go up and they look at it and they're like, oh, it's that thing from the crate. And and he's like, well, at least, you know, Isabella hit it. And then Isabella's like, I missed. And she points at the tree where there's a hole. And yeah, there's some tension there because it's like, oh, no, then who shot the alien? And then
if I'm here and you're there and my bullet's over here, then, oh.
Yeah. And so then there's...
You expect the monster to pop up and, like, kill somebody.
But... Right. Because you get the whispery voice thing that we've seen and heard the predators do, where they can mimic voices and stuff and say things, except it's revealed that this voice that's coming from seemingly all around them is Lawrence Fishburne, because he decloaks his little thingy and he takes it off, and then he's just like,
yeah, they're initially like, what are you? Because he's got the mask on and he's got an energy gun or whatever, but you think they would notice that he's like not the same size or shape as the predators, but it takes them a minute.
Well, you know, they're a little off balance given the circumstances.
He's the Predator SE.
Yeah, and they have him complain immediately that they're too noisy and that he's smelled them since they got there, and
is saying a whole lot given that there are a bunch of like dead decomposing bodies on the planet.
Yeah, it seems like maybe this is him being a little hyperbolic, perhaps. But
it's not like they all showed up like freshly showered, covered in cologne or anything. They were all on battlefields, so presumably they're kind of already in the environment. Unless it's one of those like regional things where it's like you spend too much time in a different like hemisphere and then you're like, oh wow, the air smells different here. And then like that's you.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I really don't think that he actually literally smelled them. But he seems a little weird and intense, and he invites them back to his pad. And
I mean, you kind of expect somebody who has survived on this island to be a little Jumanji about everything. So he's a little wacky. He's doing what he has to do to survive.
Yeah, yeah. He's you know, just Lawrence Fishburne, as seen in another movie that's not this one.
Larry, as we call him sometimes.
He's chewing up the scenery, and he's just totally not here with everyone else. He's doing something else entirely, and they have him takes him back to his place, which is inside some sort of weird drill alien thing, and they go inside the shaft thing, and there's a big metal tile. He moves out of the way, and they all go into a room, and he closes the metal tile, and he's like, it still has power, and you know, here, have some of my special stew, and he wafts it a few times in front of his face. He's like, so God knows what that is. Then we start to see that maybe he is a little off his rocker when he starts talking to people who are not there. So that's interesting. And we also have a confrontation with Lawrence Fishburne and the con man guy, the convict guy, who was shown earlier to be extremely gross, and who had talked about how it's almost like 5 o'clock, which means it's time for bad things. Lawrence Fishburne, meanwhile, is like, yeah. And then, you know, I have, you know, people in the Riviera, ooh la la. And it's like, okay, it's just weird. It's all weird. Everything's weird. I don't know why anybody did this. But they have Lawrence Fishburne say that he's been there for many seasons, and he converses with someone who is not there to verify that it has been 10 seasons instead of 7. He tells them that there's a ship 30 yards from the camp, and that's what the aliens use, and that there's a battle between the aliens. He's not exactly sure what the details of it are, but there seems to be some sort of feud between them, and that the aliens who are there now adapt to the changes. They go away every season, they come back when they're defeated, and there's always 3 of them, and they're always stronger and adapted to the tactics that were employed against them the previous time. And this is where the other guy says, oh, you're talking about evolution. And it's like, yeah, not really, but yes, sure. Evolution.
Yeah, it's, not a lot of great metaphors or really any useful information comes from this. It's just, he's there, and then, he's weird. And then he says he's going to go take a nap, and he kind of like creates a weird little papoose out of a blanket, and then everyone's like, well, I guess we'll relax, chill out for a little bit, eat like a spoonful of stew, and just kind of, you know, chit chat. And then all of a sudden the room fills with smoke.
Yeah. Oh, well, you forgot the part where the Yakuza guy finds a katana, and
yeah, of course. Yeah, he says, this is very old. And then Walton's like, you speak English? And he's like, yeah. So?
And it's like, well, why don't you talk more often? He's like, I talk too much. And then he holds up his hand that only has 3 fingers, 2 fingers and a thumb, technically. But it's he's got his little katana now, which will be featured later. And everybody comes.
There's... You think when he took it, he's just like, you know what? I'm taking this home as a souvenir because this is pretty great. Because he has guns.
Maybe. I mean, maybe he just wanted it for extra level of self-defense or something. I don't know. Why not carry the katana? It's not like it weighs 5,000 pounds. But
I mean, that's my mentality, too. That's why I always carry a katana with me.
How much of your thumb did you slice off with a katana, by the way?
I didn't slice off. Wait, which finger is it? I cut the knuckle of my right pointer finger about, I don't know, 3/4 of an inch long.
Uh-huh.
I didn't cut the finger off. I still have my finger.
Well, yeah, but...
There's just a little thin scar that runs down my finger.
Damn. But the...
Well, that's what you get for trying to mimic a move from a samurai movie with a real sharp sword. Alexa, stop!
But they are awoken from this rest, brief rest, by the smoke that you had mentioned.
And by the way, it's also worth mentioning at this point, somewhere in one of the previous cuts, Adrian Brody took off his shirt and then put his vest back on over top.
Yes, and so did the prisoner guy. And Topher Grace saw a photo of the Russian special ops guy's kids, which is important later when Topher Grace is pleading for his life because it's the same photo. He steals it.
See, that's a great little bit of misdirection. Is he just doing that to try and pull out anything he possibly can so that they save him? Or is this evidence of him being duplicitous?
Well, there's no way to know, and no indications whatsoever that he could be evil in any way. But they're trying to get out of the room because there's smoke, and then Adrian Brody's like, I'm going to shoot the wall. And everybody's like, why'd you do that? Because it didn't open anything. And he's like, yeah, but it called in the cavalry. And this is where a nearby predator decloaks near the thing. On the outside, where the establishing shot was. And also, it's nighttime now, despite the fact that the sun doesn't move. Nobody really explained that in this movie. But
maybe it's like the Truman Show, where he's just got like a dial on his watch and he can turn it to whatever he wants. He's like, I feel like it should be dusk right now. It just turns it. Well, he's testing out different types of whatever, like heat sensing goggles or whatever. So he wants it to be dark.
I mean, that would have been interesting, but they don't show that. They just say that it's always noon, and then all of a sudden it's not always noon. It's nighttime again. And then it's morning later. But who knows what's going on? The Predator comes into the base thing and.
Sorry, I just have to say it's always noon in Predator Delphia. You're welcome.
And so the Predator comes into the thing, and then he confronts Lawrence Fishburne, and Lawrence Fishburne is like, come on, come on! And then the Predator just immediately kills him, and Lawrence Fishburne explodes. And that's the amount of budget that they had for paying Lawrence Fishburne to be in this movie. And then the Predator goes to the room that they're all captured in and beats up the little metal tile thing a little bit just to bend the corner and stuff. And then they're like, uh-oh, it's trying to draw us out. It's trapped. And you in the audience might be thinking, why doesn't the Predator just blow this whole thing up? And the answer is because it's hunting season, I guess. And so he wants to flush them out by opening the little door thing a little bit and then backing away rather than him trying to enter the room.
Yeah, of all of the weapons the Predator uses, be it his giant arm blade or laser cannon or just his hands and fists and stuff, apparently the Predator race does not believe in grenades of any sort.
I don't know.
I guess in Predator 2, he had that the throwy disc thing.
Yeah, but that didn't like explode like this.
He could have used it to toss through the hole to bounce around off the walls and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and
up. These people all could have died through some ingenious means, but again, the movie's like, no, he wants to hunt. So they very cautiously peer around the thing, and then Adrian shoots a flare in the hallway, and then it doesn't seem to disturb any camouflage stuff. So then he's like, well, must be safe. And then they open the metal tile thing, and they get out there into the hallway, and then they start making their way, and then Topher Grace gets lost somehow, and he is separated from the group. He does what anybody would do, and that's to start shouting at the top of your lungs. Then he sets off several flares and throws the flares and stuff. And I think there's a moment where they wanted it to be dramatic. Like he only has so many flares and they're burning out because he holds one up to his face.
Of all of the things that he took three flares.
Yeah. Well, he's a doctor. So, you know, he's just ready for flares, I guess.
Wait, Topher, why did you take three flares?
Because it's what I would have done.
Okay. Great.
But useful. So he eventually is like, he sees another gap in the metal paneling and he sees the hallway that the other guys are in. He's like, help me, you have to help me. And then the Russian guy is like, oh, well, I feel bad about this, but everybody says we should go. And so he goes, and then you're
conflicted because we shared that moment where I showed you a photo of my children.
Yeah. Sucker. You would have been much better off had he not done anything at all. But they have him show back up in a second because he feels bad. Everybody else is climbing through the what would have been like the drill head thing with missing pieces, and they go into a cavern of some kind. And they're making their way out of there, and the Russian guy shoots the predator, and Topher Grace manages to escape, and then there's another confrontation where he gets all beat up, and then the Russian guy is like, ah, and he sets off the little things that he has, and it blows
he has a claymore mine attached to his belt, which he reveals dramatically by pulling open his jacket and then hitting the switches, which it's not what claymore mines do. They're not like gallons of gasoline tied to dynamite or anything. They just blast shrapnel everywhere, but whatever.
Yeah.
It was very dramatic that everyone had to like flee out of the crack in the ground before the giant fireball consumed them.
Really seemed incongruous with the amount of flammable objects that were there. He took out one predator, and then the convict guy's like, yeah, we killed one of them. Yeah. And then the other predator shows up and starts making a fuss, and he jumps on that predator with his knife.
Starts making a fuss. Oh, you know, those predators always making a fuss.
Yeah. And they have them go at it, and then he kills that guy, and then there's stuff where they go to the field, and in the field the Yakuza guy is like, well, finally a chance for me to use this katana I got 10 minutes ago.
He's like, we're walking at a very normal pace, and no matter what we do, no matter which direction we walk very slowly, this other predator always seems to be right behind us. He just will not leave us alone. So I guess that means I am going to have to stop in the middle of this tall grass while the rest of you continue on, because I gave you the nod, and I'm going to take off my shirt to show that I have tattoos covering my entire body, and I'm going to bust out this Hanzo sword or whatever, and I'm going to have an old-fashioned showdown with this other predator guy here.
Yeah, and this is frustrating for a number of reasons. It grinds the movie to a halt, for one, and
nobody is demonstrating any interesting swordsman skills for two.
No. And while he's slowing down the predator with a sword, that's a perfect opportunity for the other ones with him to shoot the predator. All of a sudden
they're bound by the laws of combat or whatever, like the gentleman's agreement of the duel. They're like, well, we can't intervene because they're having themselves a sword fight.
Yeah.
No, they should have just had what's her name with her sniper rifle go behind a tree and point at the predator's head.
Yeah, but they wanted to have this scene where there is literally a samurai sword fight, and like as filmed in better movies, I'm going to guess. And
it's not even close to how they would have done it in a better movie. They're just like, they clang the swords a couple of times. They slightly slice each other on the chest and like, aha, one for you, one for me. Now let's really go for it. And then they just run at each other.
Yeah, and it's irritating because the predator also agrees to this, like, this agreement on the terms of the combat that he's going to only use the blade that's on his, like, wrist thing, and that it will be a fair fight in that regard. But that's not really earned, because in the other movies, particularly the first movie, where the predator, you know, takes off his stuff and he's like, all right, let's go mano a mano. Arnold has certainly worked his way up to a point where he has earned that through his various clever schemes that have undermined the predator. And
was the predator's blaster damaged or lost at that point too, or did he just decide not to use it? I can't remember. In the original,
I think it was. Well, I'm struggling to remember if it was actually like damaged or not. But he takes it off, and then he takes off his mask. And they go mano a mano, with the predator assuming that he will, of course, be victorious. But the situation here is that there is no buildup, because there is no established relationship between these two individuals where they've fought at all, ever, because they haven't engaged with one another in combat before. But for some reason, the predator's like, oh, well, sword fight time. And then I got to agree to the rules. So who knows? Maybe there's some weird custom in their lore that specifies that if somebody is standing there with a sword, you got to throw away all of your cool gear and stuff, and then, you know, fight them with a, you know, sharp metal thing on your wrist. But they duke it out, and the guy gets sliced by the predator across his back, but it doesn't seem to faze him, which seems conspicuous, because that was like his spine. But then they keep going, and then the predator mortally wounds the guy, and the guy mortally wounds the predator, and they both fall over in the grass, and we get a overhead shot of the grass waving in the wind, and a bunch of weird lens artifacts, and you're just like, what was that about? Why it was self-indulgent, why did we need to do that? We cut to the other characters.
I'm going to go on a limb and say this samurai battle was as dumb as that one that I shot.
Sure. I mean, no, Dan, you're so smart.
No. I'm just saying this is as dumb as a guy fighting a pool.
Sorry, I almost choked on my St. George.
I didn't realize you had company.
But they
I don't know what a St. George is.
Remember the vodka, the St. George vodka with you made fun of it and said it was
the pretty bottle.
Yeah, you said it was. You said it was like money counterfeiting.
I didn't realize you had purchased that. I thought you just had a photo of it.
No, I said I had that anyway. So it doesn't matter. That's neither here nor there. they have this conflict with the guys, and then we cut back to Adrian Brody, Topher Grace, and Alice Braga, and they're running through the forest, and then Topher Grace steps on one of those like bear traps that we saw earlier.
Yeah, a digital bear trap, because it likes sparks and makes some weird stuff too.
Yeah, well, apparently it was invisible.
Was it a cloaking bear trap?
Yeah, because the sparks that reveal it are kind of the sparks that you see when the predators reveal themselves, and same thing happens with the net when the net goes up.
Right.
The net doesn't seem to cause an electrical discharge that harms them. It seems to just be invisible. It didn't really need to be invisible. It was on the forest floor, but whatever. So they get, Topher Grace is injured by this, and Adrian Brody's like, it wasn't meant to kill you. It was meant to maim you. It's meant to slow you down. Now you're dead weight. It'll leave you behind. Come on. And then Isabel's like, no, I can't just leave him. And then he's like,
He's one of us.
Yeah, so he's like, I'm going to go to the camp by myself, because his harebrained scheme is that he's going to go get the other predator who is involved in the feud to go help them, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, according to his logic.
And he also learned that there's a ship somewhere nearby from Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes, the ship 30 yards away or something. And yeah. So
and he's like, "Oh, you're gonna go fly the alien ship, are you? I never thought of that." And Adrian Brody says, "I'll give it a try."
Such good dialogue. But they so he gets to the camp. He comes across the predator there who was tied up, and he has a conversation with the predator where he's like, "I need to go back to Earth. I'm going to let you go, and you're going to help me. I'm going to get out of here and use the ship."
Yeah, this is where they he wakes him up by just sort of standing in front of him gently and saying,
"Hey,"
where they have a little bit of a, combatant to combatant, knowing stare down. And he's like, "Dude, don't yell, don't raise any alarms. I'm going to let you go because I'm going to help you and you're going to help me. Because we have this sort of agreement as wartime folks or something. And I want to get out of here." So then he cuts him down. And then the predator that we're familiar with pokes his wrist. Well, first he puts his mask on, which is on the ground.
You're forgetting the very first thing that happens, and that is he unceremoniously thuds to the ground.
Yeah. And then grabs Adrian Brody by the throat for a minute to sort of stare him down and say, like, "All right, I could snap your neck like a twig, but this time you freed me, so..."
Yes, yes. Whatever. It's like the lion and the mouse with the paw thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, just like that.
Or like the scorpion and the frog would not.
Well, that's not exactly the same thing, because the scorpion does...
Right, that's why I said but not.
Okay. But he suits up. He takes like 20 minutes to do that, and the other main... predator who's left, Jawbone, he shows up.
Is that his name?
No, I don't know what his name is. I'm just calling him Jawbone because he has an enormous jaw thing on the
Oh, yes. He's the extra tall one.
Yeah. The extra large. And so he shows up, and the two predators lock eyes. Oh, wait, no. First, there's the hologram thing where classic predator punches up on his little wrist thing. A hologram of solar system, and then a hologram
of... "We are here, and then you want to go there, and then I'm going to remotely start the spaceship for you so the air conditioner can run for a little bit, and it can be nice and cool in there."
Mm-hmm. It's important. So he starts that up, and we see an overhead shot of it starting up. And Adrian Brody's like, "Yeah!" And the Jawbone comes up, and then classic Predator and Jawbone face off, where they're shooting at each other and stuff, and... It's clear that the predator who's been tied up for the majority of the movie on a stick is outclassed by the one who was not tied up on a stick. And
the one who was tied up, they do actually call Classic Predator. Look at that.
Yeah, I told you. He's in the credits as Classic Predator.
Yeah, and the big tall fella is Berserker Predator.
Oh.
Oh, he also plays Falconer Predator, so... maybe he's both.
Yeah, double roll.
Yeah, and then there's Tracker Predator, but he's not Tracker Predator.
No, but remember that clever song from Clerks about Berserker? But
the song called Berserker. Yeah,
yes.
I remember.
they're duking it out, and then Adrian Brody's like, "Well, I got my ride," and he could literally just stand there and help the other predator kill the other guy, because even if this predator kills that predator, how's he like going to for sure get back? It's not like he knows what the button is that lands the thing. It's not like he would expect that to be completely automated, but who knows?
Well, they're even now. Like, he freed him and the guy started the ship, and that's the end of the agreement. Any additional interaction between the two, they would have to come to some sort of new arrangement, and that would be tricky.
It's just really stupid, because like Adrian Brody could have helped him, and then they'd both be alive. But instead, Adrian Brody's like, this is the part where it's supposed to be character growth, and it's just like, this is taking too long. This is really dumb, because Adrian Brody is just like, "Oh, what do I do? I have Isabella. Do I go back and save her? Do I just take the ship? The ship's right here. Ah, I'm going to cut it so it looks like I took the ship."
And meanwhile, Isabel fell into a hole with Topher.
Yes. They fell into the net, and then the Berserker Predator drag them to the camp and then dump them in a hole.
That's right. That's right. Of course.
Yeah. And then when Berserker Predator and Classic Predator are fighting, the Berserker Predator severely injures and then beheads Classic Predator. And Topher Grace takes this opportunity to use his little scalpel thing to use some of that poison that we saw earlier in the film that's going to cause her motor skills and blah, 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 blah to malfunction. And so she starts to have some little hallucination-y kind of warbly things, and she doesn't feel so good. And it becomes clear that Topher Grace is obviously there because he's just a different kind of predator from the rest of them. There's your subtlety that if you were, I don't know, somebody with three brain cells, you'd predicted probably 15 minutes into this movie was going to happen at some point. But I feel like
there was some reasonable doubt that maybe he was there as like the military unit's medic. Maybe.
No, because he doesn't really treat anybody.
He doesn't help anyone. Well, he offers some advice on the decomposition and no, that's all.
Yeah, he's not helpful. He does recognize a poisonous plant at one point, and then you're just like, I thought you were a doctor, not really like a botanist of like extremely rare psychoactive plants. Yeah, but he uses this to undermine her, and apparently undermining her is his plan to something. But then Adrian Brody shows back up, and he's like, I'm going to get you out of here. And Topher Grace is like, oh, thank heavens you showed up. I was in the middle of my evil monologue that I'm sure you didn't overhear. So help us up. And he does.
She's paralyzed. They must have given her something. But not me, just her.
Mm-hmm. Very specific. And it's clear that Adrian Brody probably overheard this. But he helps them anyways. So they're like, oh no, did Adrian Brody overhear this? Is Topher Grace going to get him? And you see him standing over him with a knife. And then he spins around and he's like, I'm not a good guy, but I'm fast. And it's like, okay, great. Wonderful line.
I mean, it could have been worse.
Yeah, and this is where Adrian Brody sets up a trap, because apparently the other predator had wandered off to where the ship was, which is 30 yards away, so that he could use the self-destruct on the ship and then walk back to the base at an incredibly slow pace.
There's limited range on those Bluetooth connections, so he's got to get a little closer.
Yeah, and so he gets back there, and by this point, Adrian Brody has set up a trap, and
he sprinkled salt in a circle around the area where they were drawing the pentagram, and he took off most of his clothes to show off his abs,
as
he covered himself in a very, very thin layer of mud,
almost no mud. And
and he has to point out, he's like, mud, that's right, I've got mud on me.
Mud, your immortal nemesis.
Oh no, not mud. It would be great if this predator was like, yeah, that was the other guy. I don't have a problem with the mud. Mm-hmm. I can see you just fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, he does do that in a way. He doesn't literally say that, but there's that point where he switches over to heartbeat vision, and he can take care of that. But
I do like that they kind of like flipped the heat sensing thing. So like, rather than reducing his body heat with all of the mud, again, he didn't really need to do it, he increased the ambient temperature around him by setting a big circle of fire, which is, I'll give him that. That's an effective tactic. I don't know why
I believe it's referred to as a burning ring of fire.
Yeah, I'm not going to sing the song. He should have thrown like a torch down and gone, call me Johnny Cash, as the fire goes around in a circle.
That would have been pretty funny. But they had...
it's not as dumb as some of the lines in this movie.
Unceremonious end of Topher Grace is that the Predator...
Is that a Shakespeare play?
Yeah, I believe it's Oscar Wilde. The Predator picks up Topher Grace, and then it pulls all the pins on the old-fashioned grenades that apparently people had been carrying. Because these are the kind that you see in like ye olden days, where they're the egg-shaped ones with the little shrapnel pad things all around, you know, so they break and fragment. It is not really what modern grenades look like, but I guess they were like, you know what? This is a cartoon.
Is it not? We don't use those anymore?
It is my understanding that those are no longer employed. And we certainly hadn't seen anyone use them in the film up to this point. But they apparently Topher Grace has covered them, and they do so little damage. They just seem to fuzz up the display on Berserker's heads-up thing. And then Berserker's very slowly plodding around after Adrian Brody, and Adrian Brody is doing this incredibly strange thing where he's running past the Predator with a hatchet and smacking the Predator on the head. And then he runs back the other direction and then does it again. And it doesn't read as very dramatic because it's like, wait a minute. Doesn't everybody here have a gun of some kind? Like, what are you doing with a hatchet? But he does that.
He probably ran out of ammo, but they could have shown us that, which they didn't.
Mm-mm. Because they talked about rationing ammo at several points in this film, and then we never saw anyone really, like, run out. People just didn't have their guns anymore at some points.
They should have run out because they did not ration their ammo at all.
Yeah, and so Adrian Brody is doing his little dance where he's smacking the Predator on the head, and then the Predator is like, I've had enough of this crap, and then he uses his heartbeat vision to blow up the tree that Adrian Brody's hiding behind, and Adrian Brody is cowering in fear, and he's going to be killed by the Predator in slow motion, but oh no, Isabella has recomposed herself to a degree, and I credit Alice Braga's acting here, because it's hard to act like you are not entirely capable of moving certain parts of your body, but full of adrenaline, which is causing you to jerk around and move certain parts of your body, but then also you're capable of firing a sniper rifle. It's a very specific physical act to perform that I don't think anyone else really will ever do on cinema, but she does it here, and she does a good job. Of course, we as the audience are not in any suspense at all, because we fully expect Adrian Brody not to die at this point, and so she does sniper rifle the Predator, and then the Predator detaches and shoots his little spear thingy into her shoulder. And then Adrian Brody's like, no. And then he uses the little hatchet thing to actually, like, cause damage this time instead of just bopping him on the head, and hacks up the Predator and then hacks off his arms and is part of the mandible and stuff. And then he kills the Predator. And then they have the sunrise where Adrian Brody and Isabella are huddled together in the ashes of this camp, and they're like, you know, what do we do? And then the parachutes are descending, because apparently some separate team is tasked with acquiring the targets for this whole shenanigan thing.
Yeah, it's a new season.
Yeah, and so they're dropping in. What's weird about that is, like, if it's that short of a season, it's been like 3 days. So
maybe,
yeah. So when Lawrence Fishburne says that, you know, a season, he's been through 10 seasons, then that's a month.
Yeah. I mean, time probably passes pretty slowly there.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, a season's going to last as long as the people last. I you got to imagine that there are some seasons that are, I don't know, 40 minutes long.
Yeah, but they
walk off into the woods.
Yeah, and I don't know what happens next. If only there was a sequel, and there isn't. Because this was abandoned.
Reboot, you say.
Yeah. It was rebooted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Could have been worse.
It could have been. And you know what? I will say this for this film. I don't like it, but
I will say this. It's bad. But also,
in terms of if I had to rank the Predator films that I've seen so far, And I have not seen The Predator, the Shane Black version. That's the most recent one, which we are planning on doing next. I haven't seen that one yet. If I were to just rank these ones that I have seen, I would say Predator 1 at the very tippy top, 100% tippy top. Nothing comes close to that. Like, it is such a huge drop off from 1 to 2. Can't even overstate what the drop off is. Like, enormous drop off in quality. And then you get to 2. And then I would say Predators. And then I would say the first AVP. And then I would say AVP Requiem, if I had to rank these.
I concur.
Yes. And mostly, that's not because I find this premise to be good, because this premise is nonsense BS. As we had discussed, like, Predators selecting people on Earth to abduct, to bring back here, to kind of sort of play cat and mouse with, is just weird. And the whole, like, there's another cast of Predators and they're feuding with the other Predators. And it's like, but why? Like, doesn't...
Yeah, like the Predators feuding with Predators was a little bit of a hat on a hat for this one.
Yeah, it felt like... it sort of felt like a... What if we could have had AVP, but not? Sort of a thing going on, you know, where you have your monsters duking it out.
Oh, yeah, where she becomes friends with the Predator at the end there to fight the alien. Yeah, totally, yeah. That.
And so, I don't love that. And... For those reasons, I really dislike this. But at the same time, they manage to have action occur on the screen, and they have people say and do stuff that is not 100% great, but is fine. It's certainly serviceable compared to the AVP movies. And you wind up being and not wholly entertained. I hesitate to say that. But it doesn't make you want to fall asleep like AVP Requiem does.
Well, I may have fallen asleep for the drone part, so I'm glad you reminded me that there was a waterfall there.
Oh, don't go chasing waterfalls, listening to the drones and the predators that you're used to.
Yeah. It was a long day, though, so yeah. We'll just blame it on that.
But, yeah, so this was not successful. At doing the things that the people who were making it wanted it to do. So nope.
It was made in that period of time before the dark, gritty reboot was a thing. So it's still trying to be action-y, but they didn't hit us with anything new or interesting, really. So it was just like, yeah, it's another one of those. All right.
Yeah. Well, and they had planned to do a direct sequel to this, and they apparently have. There are so many great ideas. ... Just following Lawrence Fishburne's character, Noland, around in a prequel would be a great movie. Nope. Just the tales he tells in this movie alone, I want to see those experiences. That's why I wasn't precious even about the original script I had, because once you come up with the idea of a predator planet that predators use as their hunting grounds and humans are involved somehow, that story ideas can come up so numerous, you can come up with any approach. So we really have several ideas that we can go for a sequel. They would all be good ideas, but we probably put them together to see which rises to the top if we made another one.
See also James Cameron missing the point of Terminator, that is not what Predator should be about.
Well, I mean,
these just do a day in the life of the Predator. He gets up, you know, he brushes his teeth and his mandibles. He has some breakfast. You know, he does some stretches. He hits the gym. He searches for targets. You know, there's so many things we could do.
Well, these movies are stuck in fan service mode. We'll see the next film and find out what happens there. Although from what I witnessed on an airplane seat back, I am not convinced that they managed to get out of fan service mode on that one. But
do you think there's a get to the chopper in it?
I think there's gonna be stuff, at least visually stuff that I observed. But there is, how should I put this? There is no desire to really add depth. There is a desire to keep doing the things that exist and call back to things. And so each time you see it, it's a lesser version. You know, like in Multiplicity, when they make a copy of a copy?
Yeah.
That's what's happening with all of these. And it's been happening since the first sequel to Predator, Predator 2. Is like, we need to see the things that we liked about the other thing. So make them happen. And then nothing really goes forwards. And there's no depth because the Predator can't talk or communicate or do anything really, because the whole point is that it's this monster that's coming after you. And so all you can ever do is have a monster that's coming after you, and you can make the monster bigger and badder and weirder and have different weapons and stuff, but it doesn't change the fact that they're hitting the same beats that they would just because it's the same monster and they need to hit those.
But now the mandibles are larger and the blades come out of the arm further.
Ugh. Yeah. But that's the thing that really just irks me about the whole thing, is it's just like, it doesn't really like deliver on anything, because you have the opportunity where you could plant a seed and make this into more of a franchise, because you do something more complicated or you change the scenario in such a way that it alters the dynamic between the two of them. But that's not what this movie does. It has the same dynamic between humans and predators. It just moves the humans to a different place. So it changes the setting, but not the dynamic. And because of that, it makes even less sense when the predator doesn't just like kill all of them. But that,
so what you're saying is you want to see Predator versus the X-Men.
No, yes. Predator versus the X-Men versus Stretch Armstrong.
Mm. Well, you know, if it was versus the X-Men, you got Wolverine, and he'd be like, "Aha, I got a blade too." And then Cyclops is there. He's like, "Ooh, we both have blasters now. Now we're evenly matched."
I'm kind of worried that this is an existing Dark Horse crossover comic that exists.
Let's see here.
Yeah.
Google Predator versus X-Men. Images for Predators versus X-Men Battles comic. Is this
is it canon? A lot of
comic frames here. Oh, there's a picture of a predator crossing claws with Wolverine.
Hard to believe.
Tantumson Studios? I don't know what that is.
I have no idea. But this is, you know, garbage. Continue to stress, watch the first movie, and then flush the rest of this down the toilet. And that's what you got.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. What are your complex feelings on this subject?
No, you've said all of the things that I would want to say. Mm. I think I'm just a little bit more forgiving of the fact that, like, there's not much you can do with Predator. So you're going to make a Predator movie, it's going to be one of these, probably.
So it's a good, bad movie?
It's, it was never going to be a good, good movie. So, that.
Snatching victory from the jaws of defeat.
The other way around. The other way. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, slightly subpar.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this is more interesting than watching the AVP ones. But, you know, garbage still. Yeah.
Shane Black will rescue us all.
Or not. I really think that one's going to be bad. I just have a hunch. Which is why I haven't seen it. But
I think it's going to be worse than this one. I mean, it's certainly going to have a more convoluted story, because if we know anything about Shane Black, it's that his stories are fairly meandering.
How much of it takes place during Christmas?
Well, the whole thing, probably, right?
Jingle bells, predator smells.
There's going to be a kid shaking the presents under the tree.
Queen laid an egg.
The predator is going to walk by the window and he's going to go, "Mommy, there's Santa's outside." And it's not going to be Santa. It's going to be the predator.
And then he breaks through the window But
well, no, he's gonna be on the roof of the neighbor's house, and the kid's gonna be like, oh, is that a reindeer? And he's gonna be like, no, it's the Predator.
And then he plays a recording of Santa that he overheard on a TV thing, and it's gonna go, ho, 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 and then everybody's gonna be like, oh no, no, yeah. I mean, I kid, but we'll find out how bad it is specifically in the near future.
I am currently watching a very bad CG fan film of Predator versus Wolverine.
I think you can just skip that one.
It's on mute. I think it's from Machinima.
There was one that was done a very long time ago. I think like 10, maybe 15 years ago, where it was some guy had Joker and the Batman and a rain scene, and this is before Nolan or any of that stuff. And he's like, you can't kill me, blah blah blah. And then all of a sudden, the Predator lights show up and then shoot the thing, and then there's an alien, and then they all fight in the end. There's a weird.
I may have seen that. Oh god, yeah, this is live action. How did they manage to make costumes that look CG but are live action?
Science.
Very bad.
On that note,
yeah,
we should wrap this up. Bid adieu to this season of hunting.
That's my Predator voice. That's how you say goodbye in Predator.
Oh. Sure.
Yeah. You know, I've got the Duolingo for Predator language.
The Rosetta Stone of Predator.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's got this weird calculator language on it.
Mm-hmm. It's just several alarm clocks that are broken and stuck together.
Yeah. You think sometimes the Predator like looks at his little thing and does the calculator thing where he writes boobies and then giggles to himself?
If only.
If only.